Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Welcome to the Brizzled meeting of Dumpty Dum. It's lovely you've all come tonight, especially those that come from a long way away. Those of you that were late are forgiven. We are in Renato's in Bristol in King Street, and we are going to sing this week's Dumpty Dum when you are ready after three. One, two, three.
Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum.
Well done.
Folks, I do apologise today because I will sound... I won't have my normal sonorous tones because, quite frankly, I have forgotten me bloody lead yet again. Got a mic, no lead. So this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that's centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the Prince Charming in silk tights, that is Royfield Brown. With me are the rattled old dame, that is...
Lucy Freeman. And with us this week we have...
Charlotte Martin, better known as Susan Carter.
Woohoo! And the last part of our Christmas pantomime, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from the Dumpty Dum meetup in Bristol. There were 12 of us hardy souls that met up at, I think it was called Renato's, and we had pizza and beer, and some people chatted until about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was most excellent. And Lucy?
Yes.
Do you know one of the things which has kind of made that meetup possible?
Twitter, Auntie Jean, mobile phones, William the Parrot. I don't know.
Well, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. All of those things which you said are true. But we've now got Tractor, our Dumpty Dum meetup.
Yes.
Right, yes. Folks. So this is a wonderful thing. And we have to thank our friends at cornerstonelabs.co.uk. I'm sure I've got it right this time. Who have put together the Dumpty Dum map. Quite simply, all you do is you go on there and you pin your location. And you don't have to pin your exact location, because I know some people are a little bit worried about stalkers.
Yeah.
Have you got any stalkers, Lucy?
Loads.
Fantastic. Thought so. Now, if you've got a stalker, don't pin your exact location. Just pin the middle of your town or your village where you live. And that will be enough, because the whole point of this is so that people who are relatively close by, who are Dumpty Dummers, and we can vouch for them, because if you're a Dumpty Dummer, you're a good sort. Basically, then they can kind of contact you through Twitter or maybe through a public forum of Facebook and just, you know, and organise meetups. So, you know, none of your personal info's there and whatever, but it's great because you know what, Lucy?
What?
We've got clusters.
You want to get some cream for that?
No. These are good clusters. Like, okay. Plymouth. There's like loads of listeners in Plymouth, so they should all have a meetup, or in Brighton.
That's Philippa Davy in that lot, isn't it?
It is, and her posse. But in Brighton, yeah. I don't think the people in Brighton actually know each other, but they should do.
Oh.
See all these clusters. Even in southern Spain, there's this one woman who lives in Gibraltar. Somebody lives in a town just outside of Gibraltar. They need to hook up. Do. And what really made my, warmed the cockles of my heart was that, you know, Jan Mitchell, Jan from Cannes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she was saying, I'm all alone in Vancouver.
There's no... You know, she found someone, didn't she?
Yes, through the map. Actual Organics lives the other side of Vancouver. So pin yourself to the map. You can use Facebook or you can use Twitter now. I will put a page on our website, but that's another tortured kind of goings on, which you probably don't want to know about. Because, Lucy, forget the Russians, Azerbaijanis now.
No.
Yes. All of my websites were taken down yesterday by the Turan Cyber Army. I kid ye not.
Have they got an objection to the archers?
Well, this is what I'm wondering. They're all from probably from Pennyhasset or something, aren't they? But I laugh now.
Infidels from Pennyhasset.
I laugh now, but I tell you, I was not laughing yesterday when I'm woken up to Azerbaijani flags flying on all of my websites, patrolling wolves. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, it only took about 5 hours to fix that yesterday, and I don't know if it's properly fixed, but it anyway, at least Dum-de-dum comes back up, and so does Mid-Atlantic and Royfield.com.
Whew. Blimey. You seem to have done something to piss off the Urals, haven't you? Have you slept with someone's wife or something? A prominent Azerbaijani?
Niet. Anyway, wherever are we with this? So go to our map, think it's wonderful, but we'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the show. Right, so after that diversion, Lucy.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to send us in a dum-de-dum, how can they do
but
that?
They're not too frightened to, yes. They can do that. If you'd like to sing us a dum-de-dum in Azerbaijani, if you fancy it, leave us a plot prediction or thump someone who couldn't deserve it more right in the eye. Then ring us on 0203 0313 105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to the ever-travelling Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Sharon Bridges for her amazing voices, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, and to Derek for Low in the Back Bedroom. It's Halloween, and Derek decided to go trick-or-treating. He called on Auntie Cardboard first, and she screamed and punched him in the face. He was quite upset, as he'd only called to ask her if she could help him choose a costume.
On this week's episode, we have calls from Dusty Substances and Claire Asprey, who want to applaud Alan. New York Nigel... Oh, he's a real Alan, who's getting his girls muddled up. Jojo Sexy Hills, who's found the new Brian Aldridge. Christine Armstrong, who's had a surprise from her hubby. Morris Snell, who can understand Justin and Cosmo with the Bridge Farm accounts. But first, before all of that, it's Juicy Lucy Freeman's Fortnight in Ambridge.
We started the fortnight with the world's most awkward brekkie with the squabbling fair brethren, closely followed by the world's most awkward drink with the squabbling fair brethren and Bert, and the world's most awkward apology from Alice to Ed. Once again, we were in the ball having one conversation with a row we can barely hear going on in the background. Is this going to be a trend? A way of fitting double the storylines in by having one episode with everyone talking at once so we spend the whole time going, what? Who's that? What's he say? Like someone in an old people's home. In fact, the whole village was feeling very fractious and the entire dialogue was, whoops, oh dear, sorry, no, don't worry, I'll go the other way after you, don't mind me. Titchener proved how much he genuinely loved Henry by threatening to shove all his stuff in a skip. I hope the spirit of that flipping rabbit rises up for Halloween and throttles him. Jill went full on nuclear with Pip. It all kicked off with the flapjacks. Only on the Archers could family schism be created by flapjacks and end with the words, I'll never eat any of your cake ever again. Pip is still irritatingly nonplussed by why Rex is marching around the village kicking things. Oh, I can't understand why he's so cross. Shall I talk to him? Get off, Toby. Also, scriptwriters, Toby would say pudding, not dessert. He's posh, not lower middle. Pip, in a fit of pique, or possibly peep, invited Toby to live with her, so if he's not hanging his Peter Jones boxers over someone else's bedstead by the end of the month, I'm a monkey's uncle. And he'll have much more time for seduction now he's been officially fired from his job as a... No idea. Krusty is still pimping Roy. I think polish a turd is the expression just made for this activity. He decided to airbrush his wife and daughter out of his dating app pictures at first, but then realised his arms just look really weird and chimpanzee-like curled around two invisible people. Every dating picture like that I've ever seen, the man's either been skiing or leaning up against some sort of machinery. I'm not sure how Roy could match that, really. Sitting on Lakey Hill on a tin tray, poised sexily in a seahorse rubber ring in the Gay Grable swimming pool. They decided in the end on the Bridge Farm reed bed system for the photographs. Oh, perfect. Roy, knee-deep in sewage, as gulls fly off with bits of poo in their beaks. Try and look less like you're at the dentist, said Kirsty. Mop up the dribble and stop swigging that pink stuff. Even after that, he ended up snogging a dog. Alistair's had a busy week of it. He's worryingly keen on Shula becoming further involved in the hunt. Hang on. You wear very tight hunting gear and shiny riding boots and I call you master. So could I, like, call you that at home? You'd keep the boots on, would you? Hang on, I'll just sell my entire business. Then he went over to Grange Farm and prescribed an anti-inflammatory, a rub down and some cod liver oil, but I wasn't sure if it was for Bartleby or Joe. Either would work, probably. Then he had to go and see Adam dispense a jab of penicillin. God alone knows who's been shagging now. Linda is having problems controlling her pyroclastic flow. Tenor lady, I told you. She's roped in Alice and Kate to try and help her control it like an out-of-control fire hose. In an interesting twist on No One Wants to Be in the Christmas Play, Oh No, What Shall We Do? They've gone for No One Wants to Be in the Christmas Play, Oh No, What Shall We Do? I don't understand why both Alice and Kate, who are both women with full-time jobs, are treating this role as Linda's volunteer sidekicks as if it was a matter of national security. Neither of them did a stroke of work, but just keep wandering around Ambridge, getting posher and posher, and wittering on about Mother Goose and Cinder Bloody Rella. Alice now sounds like Princess Margaret with a head cold. Elizabeth's cross because her guests are freezing cold, apparently. They're really demanding. They want a roof on the barn and blankets and running water. Peasants. Elizabeth screamed for the cavalry and Hooty Jill cantered around Lower Loxley throwing flapjacks over her shoulder. Freddie Pargeter is not making friends at his new school. Not proper friends anyway, he says. Hardly any of them have even got a drawing room, apparently. Lillian had a very sensitive chat with Helen about her psychotic ex, conveniently forgetting that her boyfriend has given the psychotic ex a job, notwithstanding admissions of rape and coercive control, which is allowing him to remain in the village and make Helen's life a living nightmare. Well done, Lillian. That's true empathy. Adam has gone from boo-hoo, my husband won't take me back when I was a two-timing arsehole, to boo-hoo, my husband has taken me back when I was a two-timing arsehole, but it's taking ages for me to feel happy and now I'm bored. Anyway, he's preoccupied with a visit from a soil discussion group. Do you reckon that's soil? Yep, that's soil. Shula is now all over Alistair like a rash. After months of ignoring him, apart from the odd tut when he fails to turn up in the millisecond the souffles are ready, she's now giggling away like a loon at every comment he makes and telling people what a marvellous husband he is for selling his business for her. Then with typical Shula contrariness, she proceeded to try and undo the sale for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Neil, a man whose idea of a facial is getting in the way of the hose when he's clearing a pig arc, is being forced to become...
That's a good one. I have to stop you. That's a good one.
No joke now. Neil is being forced to become metrosexual as Susan's having her entire family shot. A bit drastic, but I sympathise. There was a marvellous scene in which Shula turned up to find Neil smeared in avocado with an erection like an iron girder poking out of his dressing gown. Anyway, Susan rejected Robert Snell as a potential photographer on the grounds that after last time he might slip in an accidental crotch shot and there aren't enough stars in the Milky Way for that. The end.
That was a stunning fortnight. I'm not going to say I missed you last week because I didn't, but that was masterful. It was very good.
Thank you very much. Can I tell you my Norfolk thing now?
Go on then.
There's lots of studies have been done on Norfolk dialect because it's a very old dialect. And anybody of our overseas listeners, particularly the Anglophiles amongst you, go and have a look at Norfolk dialect, because it is absolutely astonishing, the accent and the words that they use. And you know, there was like a ladybird invasion where we were. There were hundreds and millions of the things. They're not sure why. It's just one of those weird temporal things that just happens. But guess what the Norfolk dialect is for a ladybird?
I have no idea.
A bishy barney bee.
A bishy barney bee.
Isn't that great?
That's awesome. That is really cool. And
this is the awesome bit. Guess what it is? Guess what an owl is called? You're not going to believe this.
Tell me then.
A Jill Hooter.
You stop it.
No, seriously.
That's such a lie. Really?
Yeah, look it up, honestly. Have a quick Google. Seriously.
Crumbs.
Because I thought, blimey, did I read that somewhere? I'd never, never heard that in my life before. A Jill Hooter is an owl.
Bloody Nora. Well, I know that Norfolk is one of the most kind of homogeneous bits of England racially in terms of there aren't many remnants of the Celts there in terms of language or ethnicity. And so yeah, it's one of the highest preponderance, Norfolk and the North East, the highest preponderance of people with blonde hair, because they're all just, you know, ankles.
Yeah.
So I know it's all peculiar. When they say they're all kind of cousins, they are. And the lovely thing is about our map, if you're from Norfolk, you can hook up with the... There are one or two, not
with
many.
All your relatives.
I think, yes. The internet...
There's that old joke, isn't there, about someone saying, I went to Norfolk and with my friend and I met his sister-in-law, his wife and his cousin, and she was a lovely woman.
Well, whilst we were, when the tractor map was starting to be populated, Norfolk was conspicuous with its absence. And Fat Bloke Talking, who's from Cambridgeshire, he basically says, well, of course, the internet stops at the Fens, and they've got their own internet in Norfolk.
They have bugger all phone signal in Norfolk. That's definitely true.
But the internet in the last 5 days has obviously got to Norfolk, because we actually have somebody in Norwich now and somebody else somewhere else. So, but anyway, Norfolk people, don't let the rest of the country take the piss out of you and say that you're uncouth and there is no interwebs there. Get onto our map and pin yourself and show some East Anglian pride. That's what I say.
I have to say, it's absolutely beautiful.
Well, why didn't you let me come with you?
I did! Oh. You didn't answer.
Oh, shy.
Oh, yeah, funny.
But anyway, folks don't want to hear about this. They want to hear about your interview with Charlotte Martin.
Oh, yes. She was great. We had such a lot of excitement when we said that you were coming on the show.
That's fabulous.
Susan seems to have had a bit of a moment in the last year, hasn't she? She's kind of, a lot of her humour has come out more than it ever has before, I think.
I think you're probably right. It's really interesting, actually, because it has been kind of bubbling under for a long time. But I think the writers have really got her, you know, in the past couple of years. And as you say, kind of brought that comedic nature and the funniness out brilliantly. And I'm so privileged because I get probably some of the best lines in the programme, I think, sometimes. I think that the writers have really got the character, and I think they know how they can kind of get me to do the funny bits, you know, really, really well. I think they know what Y can do as an actress, which is great. I really enjoy it.
But I mean, you have got fantastic comic timing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Really, I mean, I write a bit of comedy sometimes, and just the pauses and the timing is just blissful, and that's what makes people stop in their tracks and roar. I think it's not so much what she says; It's how she says it and how the kind of the yearning behind, you know, her social climbing and all the rest of it. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. No, it's lovely. I mean, you know, I must admit that, you know, some of my favourite comic actresses, well, one in particular is Victoria Wood and Julie Walters. I mean, you know, I'm very much, you know, kind of aping after them, really. You know, I use those, both of those, and their writing because it's so real.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely hilariously funny. I think probably that's what I've got in my head when I'm doing it.
I think that, all that, all the stuff about the tabard, that was, that had Victoria Wood's, like, written through the middle of it, like a stick of Blackpool rock, didn't it? It really
just,
did.
Didn't it just? And, you know, gosh, as an actress, I would have given my eye teeth to have actually worked with her, because I think she was just marvellous writer, you know, so, observationally, absolutely on the ticket, and I just love her stuff. And I think, you know, as I say, I think that's where... That's kind of the background to Susan a bit, you know. She's there. She's in a Victoria Wood sitcom, isn't she? Really.
We had Emerald on your Archer's daughter, and she said Charlotte's always so glamorous. And she said people have this picture in her head of Susan, and then Charlotte turns up and she's wearing loads of, you know, silver bangles, and she's got great makeup on, and she just looks really glamorous and un-Susanish. Yeah. What parts of Susan do you think do match up with you?
Oh my goodness, what a question! Gosh, I'd like to say none at all, but of course, as actors, we bring all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's quite interesting, really, because I am not as an actress, you know, as Charlotte, I really am not a gossipy person at all. I hate all that politics and backsniping and all that. I loathe all that. So that is really completely away from who I am as a person. But I think in a way, being able to do that as Susan is quite good fun, and I quite enjoy that. So it's kind of a bit of a let out, a bit of a an opening for her to kind of be, for me to explore those parts of me which aren't terribly like me. But gosh, yeah, God, what's like me? Goodness me! I suppose the thing that probably stands out more than anything is that she thinks of her family and wants her family to do well. And so I suppose I've got two daughters and, you know, I want the best for them. So I suppose the part of Susan I can probably link into most realistically is her drive. And I think she genuinely is, does care for her family and doesn't want them. It's just the way she goes about it is sometimes a bit heavy-handed, to say the least. But I think probably, you know, that the family stuff, you know, kind of looking out for your loved ones and wanting them to be the best they possibly can be.
I think one of the things that our listeners have enjoyed so much recently is Susan's relationship with Neil and kind of the fact that they are, In you know, when you've got the Aldridges and you've got you know, David and Ruth went through the mill in the last year, and all these sort of, and Alistair and Shula, and no one knows what the hell's going on there, but least of all Alistair and Shula. But they've kind of been a steadfast, no matter what. I mean, I know they had wobbles when she was in prison. He sort of had a bit of a thing with someone else, didn't he? But
did he just? Yes.
There's kind of, they've been such a steadfast couple, and in a bizarre way they keep the romance alive, don't they, despite all the overalls and the,
because, well, I think we have to thank Chili Con Carne for that.
We have a question about the famous chili later on from one of our listeners, but there's kind of when Emma and the children were living in Ambridge View, there was a palpable sense of frustration that they couldn't have any time for themselves.
I know.
So what's the secret?
Really,
what is the secret of the Carter
house? What is the secret? Oh, who knows? Pig farming, perhaps. I don't know. It's great fun. I mean, Brian Hewley, who plays Neil, and myself, we have such a glorious time in the studio. You can imagine, can't you? Playing these characters. But yeah, there seems to be some magic there that it is really, you know, cements them together and keeps them growing as a couple. Despite, I mean, you know, people call Neil a saint for putting up with Susan. And, you know, I can sort of see that because she is on his case a lot, and she is sometimes away with the fairies in terms of the stuff that she gets involved with and the ideas she has. But for some reason, it's an opposites attract. Perhaps he's, you know, because he's such a laid back, relaxed, calm person, and she's the other end of the spectrum. So perhaps it's that keeps them growing together. But there must be something. And as I say, I'll go back. I think it probably is to do with Jimmy that actually keeps them together and keeps them growing as a couple. And, you know, long may that continue, I hope.
Who do you think, which of her children do you think that she's most proud of? Because she seems to give Emma an inordinately hard time.
Yeah.
But because Christopher married an Aldridge, she's, you know, and also he had all the problems when he was born and everything. He still just seems to be the golden boy, and I can't really... It always feels to me as if Emma is trying to catch up somehow. I think she's given up recently, but not, you know.
So yeah.
Where does that? Do you think that's a Susan and men thing? Because she does like a, she does like a bloke, doesn't she? She does.
I think it's more to do with mother daughter relationships, and I think, you know, that was always going to be a hard thing because Susan has such high expectations, and I think she is probably very hard on Emma because she's a girl, and perhaps sees herself or things that she may have wanted to have achieved, that she wants to kind of live almost vicariously through Emma, and Emma perhaps hasn't done that. And I think the relationship she has with Christopher is, you know, he is her boy. And again, I think it's that mother-son relationship. You know, he is a golden boy. She perhaps has some guilt, perhaps, about, you know, when he was first born and that difficulty bonding with him. Mm. And actually, perhaps she's overcompensating now he's older. I don't know. But, I mean, I think one of the things she is very proud of, as you rightly pointed out, was that, you know, he's moved into a different class bracket, hasn't he?
Whereas Emma's married a Grundy.
Indeed. So, you know, in terms of social climbing, you know, Christopher's ticked all the boxes at the moment. So, I think that's probably is high on in Susan's books, just because she wants the best for them. She wants them to kind of break out. I mean, if you think about Susan's history and where she came from and the whole Horribin clan, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to get out of that? And, you know, in her defence, I know she's criticised by a lot of people, but, you know, she's trying her hardest to get out of that. And I think she's doing a really good job, really.
Despite the best efforts of Tracy to drag her down and remind her, what has happened to Tracy? Where is Tracy and Susan's dad and all that?
I don't know, to be honest. It's interesting, isn't it? Because they were in for that time when we had a great, you know, when Susan's mum died and all that.
Yeah.
It was great to have, you know, the father in and Tracy in. And, you know, Susie, who plays Tracy, is a great actress to work with. So I'm just hoping, fingers crossed, that she might reappear again soon. But, yeah, there's, I think isn't the dad living in a flat in outside of British somewhere in some, because wasn't he moved out of his house or something? That vaguely rings a bell.
But there was also the thing about Tracy managed to get the rights to his house, didn't she?
That's right, yes.
And then that storyline sort of disappeared up a culvert and we never saw it again, so I don't know.
And that, you know, that's a shame. I mean, you know, that happens. I mean, if you think about how big the cast is, and how many potential storylines there are. I mean, it's hard, and it's a hard fact of life that, you know, there is a focus on a particular group of characters, and that's to the detriment of others. And that, you know, that's inevitable, I suppose, in the soap.
Yeah.
Like the Archers. But I do hope the Horribin clan reappear again, because that's some of the funniest stuff I do, I think.
it's just her despair at them, you know, her despair at Tracy continually, especially when she was racing around after Iftikhar. That was hilarious.
My gosh. Sisters, I don't know.
And we thought it was so good when she said to Helen, "I'm sorry, I got it wrong. I called it wrong about Rob." I thought that was so brilliant of her.
I know.
So brave of her.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, when I read the script, I thought, "Oh my goodness!" You know, she's moved so dramatically. And I think what had one of the reasons that happened, I think, was because of the situation with Emma and Rob. And I think it was all right to kind of still sort of like him when it was Helen, because she was kind of, you know, not part of Susan's immediate life. But I think as soon as any kind of tension happened with her own daughter, I think that just kind of flagged up everything. And that was a nice moment. I was glad that they did that, the writers did that.
So in real life, you are a therapist.
Well, I'm a research psychologist.
Okay. What is that?
Okay, so I don't have necessarily client contact in terms of therapeutic sessions, but what I do is research youth mental health. So we were in trials looking at early intervention, resilience, emotional well-being in young people.
That is unfortunately a massively growth area at the moment, isn't it? Because it's on the rise so dramatically.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We had a question from our resident psychiatrist, Witherspoon, in New York.
Greetings to all, especially to Charlotte Martin. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. From child psychiatrist and therapy dog to child psychologist, we're very excited to ask a couple of questions of this talented actress and mental health professional who so ably brings out the humanity in a sometimes unlikable character. Do the Archer's writers ask you for your input on mental health issues as they relate to the Archers? I was especially amused on Friday when Rob went on and on about psychometric testing and psychobabble. That's all my questions. We hope to see you at some future conference of shrinks.
Okay, well, no, they don't, which is a shame in a way, but I'm not sure whether how helpful that would be for them. I think it's probably easier to take someone who's actually not involved in the program, so from an outside perspective. So no, I don't get consulted in that. Although we have interesting discussions sometimes in the green room, particularly about Rob and what's wrong with him. And so there's that. But in terms of informing my role as an actress, I think the two are really closely intertwined. I mean, the reason I started studying psychology in the first place was because I was an actress, but I was also interested in interpersonal relationships and how people responded to one another in daily life and also during stressful periods. And so, and that was, you know, part of understanding certain roles that you were playing, you know, how would I respond to this person if they were behaving like this, or if I had this particular history, or I'd been traumatized, or this, that, and the other. So they are, I think, actor and psychologist sit very, very well together, and one informs the other. I think it's a two-way process.
With your sort of mental health hat on, do you think, when you talked about what you talked about in the green room, I mean, is it your view that Rob is just a deeply unpleasant man, or whether he is actually very damaged? My own pet theory is that he has narcissistic personality disorder, which I've been banging on about for months, but no idea if that's right.
I think you're spot on, Lucy, to be honest. I think he definitely has traits of narcissistic personality disorder. I think going back to whether he's innately evil or not, I mean, I don't think anybody is born innately evil. We're all products of our childhood and our early relationships, and I think that defines who we are. And I think we can see that very cleverly with what the writers have done, bringing the parents of Rob into the program and showing how their relationship is with one another, but also their relationship with him. And I think, you know, no one is innately evil. And I think Rob, despite his you know, the terrible things he's done, he's probably quite damaged himself.
any brief listen to Bruce for about more than half a second, exactly. And you'd kind of pick up on.
Blah, I know. Blah, well, horrible, a horrible man. Mm. Nice actor, but horrible man.
Now, we have one from Moaness.
Charlotte, do you ever receive the scripts and your heart sink seeing what tactless stupidness is being put into Susan Carter's mouth again? Or do you relish in playing somebody who can be a little bit of a demon?
No.
you clap your hands and shout, whippy!
I'll tell you why, because I love what they do with her. I love her. She's away with the fairies half the time, and you know, I wouldn't put anything past her. I mean, occasionally there have been some stuff where that she said something kind of bordering racist about somebody, or kind of, and you know, that's hard to justify, and you have to justify that because you know the character needs to say it, and you know, yeah. I think so the moments like that make me wince a bit, but generally as a character I love all her eccentricities, and I love, you know, the bonkersness of her, if that's a word, because she's a joy to play, you know. I mean, you know, it is almost like a farce in a way when I play Susan, because it is madness personified, really. she is crazily funny. I think that's how I might describe her. but no, I never think, oh my God, no, that's terrible. No, I enjoy the fun of her. Yeah.
Where would you like to see Susan in 5 years' time, do you think? It's like the bottom of a well or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, well, hopefully not. Hopefully she won't go on any roofs or anything like that in the near future. But no, you know, I think I'd like to see her, because she has been and always is about the family and about, you know, helping a family perform and become the best they can, as I've said before. I think what I'd like to see her doing is actually kind of now spending some time on herself. And I think, you know, this whole storyline at the moment with her having the portrait painted and feeling a bit kind of, you know, unglamorous and a bit kind of, oh, you know, the calendar and all that nudity, and it's made her kind of feel a bit fragile as a woman, which I think is very realistic for women of a certain age.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm quite enjoying that. So what I would like to do is see her grow now from that personally as an individual, rather than thinking about everybody else, because I think that's what she does. I'd like her to spend some time perhaps growing as a person. I don't know where that would take her, but, you know, yeah.
I can see her as chief executive of Unilever or something with her. Once she's done a management training course, there'll
exactly.
be no stopping her.
I know. you never know. I mean, she could end up anywhere, you know. I mean, John
or an MP. I could really see her as an MP.
Well, perhaps that's, you know, that's a really good story.
For UKIP, though, obviously.
Yeah,
it would be UKIP.
For the local. Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, there we go. That's the next 5 years sorted, I think.
Amy Gilbert said, she emailed us and said she's very glad that you're on Dumpty Dum. And she said, what was it like to do Calendar Girls?
Oh, it was the best fun. We had such a lovely time. I mean, it's great being in the Archers, and having been in it for such a long time has been fabulous. But as an actress, you also want to do other stuff as well. Yeah. And unfortunately, when you've been in the Archers for a certain length of time, that's the only, even though it's radio, very often that's the only role people see you as being able to play. So you get sort of typecast in a way, which is a shame. So the wonderful opportunity to do one, Blythe Spirit, but also Calendar Girls last year was just a joy. We had such fun. We had lots of giggles. There were lots of, you can imagine, can't you? You know, a group of actors of a certain age in London drinking champagne with no clothes on. It was really good fun. We really enjoyed it.
Did you bring your stickers along for if anything?
Do you know I didn't? How outrageous. Yeah. That was a bizarre storyline, wasn't it?
Her sitting there in the dark, frantically sticking stickers on pictures of nipples.
I know. It's very odd. I think that was one of the things where I thought, oh my goodness, this is quite frantic, isn't it, that she's so desperate. I mean, I don't know what was showing. I mean, there's probably nothing showing. I think it was just the start of her insecurities as a woman of a certain age. So, yeah.
Sometimes I blame Kerry Davis for this. Sometimes there's a big League of Gentlemen strand that goes through the Archers. And I'm
sure.
I know.
Susan and the stickers. Doesn't he, Kerry?
Yeah. now, Dusty Substances.
Oh, yes.
Says,
I adore Susan. You are just the perfect character. So thank you for bringing so much enjoyment to my listening. The question that I and probably the entire nation would like to know is, can we have your recipe for chili, please? Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye-bye.
I don't know whether that would be too dangerous of me, actually, to release that into the public arena.
It's not safe in unskilled hands.
It's not safe. I mean, you know, look what it ends up as. You know, I mean, no, I think at the moment I shall keep that close to my heart.
Yes, play it close to your chest along with Neil.
For the safety of everybody out
there,
I think.
Once it was out,
that's really interesting, Lucy, because I can't remember when the first reference to chili was. I mean, I think it's probably couple of years ago or something, and I don't know how it suddenly leapt into the, I mean, because on Twitter everybody said, oh, you know, chili, inverted commas, and you know what that, and I don't know how that became.
It was, she was rewarding him for, she was trying to persuade him to do something, I can't remember what it was, and it was his reward, and she said, I've made a chili, and it was just the pause around the I've made a chili, and then he went, all right, then I'll come back now, and everyone thought, well, hey, date night.
It's just bizarre, but it's, again, you know, it's wonderful. I love it. I mean, I live tweet, and the omnibus on Sunday mornings, as probably most of the listeners know, who tweet, with funny photographs and things to do with the programme. But one of the funniest things that makes me roar is this, you know, reference to chili. And when I see what some of the comments and some of the hilarious comments that some of the Archers fans tweet about those kinds of things, it just makes me roar. And I love it. Absolutely love it.
You are very, very quick at those pictures. Do you have them all lined up, ready to go?
No, I do them as and when. I just hear funny things in the programme. I suppose I'm not taking the mickey, but I'm kind of looking at the Archers in a wry way. I hear a line and I think, God, that's hilarious. So I'll just kind of find a photograph. So no, I don't. It's all quite spontaneous. But I tell you what, Lucy, it's becoming like a full-time job now. And I'm thinking, hey, you know, I should be being paid for this. But it's good fun, and there's some lovely people on Twitter who follow the Archers, and they're very sweet to me. You know, they love to hate Susan, and you know, I really appreciate their time and effort. You know, just in kind of being complimentary about stuff. It's very nice out there. Well, you all know this from Dumpty Dum. I mean, you know, that's exactly what happens with you, isn't it? You know, they. The fans are very complimentary and supportive and enthusiastic, and it's lovely. It's lovely to be part of this wider kind of Ambridge community, really.
I think Twitter has sort of created a lovely little Ambridge enclave of niceness on social media, which can be a pretty unpleasant place sometimes, but there's so little argy-bargy on about, you know, the Archers and the tweet along and everything like that. Every, you know, it's a splendid place to be. It really is.
It is. No, it's excellent. It's, you know, fantastic. I really enjoy being part of that.
And we really, really enjoy Susan being part of the Archers. I hope she never, ever, ever goes or nothing. Yeah. No falling off roofs, as you said. No falling into culverts. No, nothing. No going back to prison again, no matter how much she is.
No.
I have to say, though, I used to live near a pig farm and I used to work there. And when I came back, God, the smell. I cannot tell you. It gets in your hair. It gets up. You know, you just smell.
Well, that's the reason, though, Lucy. That's the reason why she cooks such a strong chili.
Singe all her nose hairs off so she can't smell anything anymore.
That's the reason.
But I just think, you know, when you said, you know, that he's a saint to put up with her, she is a saint to put up with the smell of that, honestly. If that's what he comes in with.
Yeah.
Him and Ed as well.
It's amazing, yeah. Well, long may they continue.
Yes. And thank you so much for coming on Dumpty Dum. We really appreciate it. And you're one of our favourite tweet-alongers. And it's great that you're so sort of open to the fans. It's lovely. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
I love it. And it's been really nice to meet you, Lucy. And it's a shame I couldn't meet Roy Field and say hi to him from me.
I know, he's really cross.
Oh, well, perhaps another time.
Yes. Oh, yes, he'd love that.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
We have a double hander. We have Dusty Substances and Claire Asprey.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. I just heard Friday evening's episode where the Reverend Bunter spent some time with Rob. And I wanted to say just what a useful scene I thought it was on a number of levels, really. Alan is probably the only person in the village who could speak to Titchy Knob in a totally sort of non-judgmental way, whatever his own personal thoughts were. And he has a unique role of looking after his parish. And it was wonderful to see Rob being just as unspeakably unpleasant in that context as he would have been with anyone else. So Rob was able to hear that, which will have been useful for him. Alan would have been able to hear that, which would have been useful for him. But it also showed for us that Rob is still unhinged, which can only be a good thing, really. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. Hope everyone's having a good time. And it was great to see the photos from the West Country meetup with my friend Jenny Allen. I was ringing to say some thoughts about the scenes between Rob and Alan on Friday. Firstly, I think Rob's done himself no favours by being a petulant pain in the arse with the vicar. I think Alan did incredibly well to bite his tongue. I know there's been quite a lot of criticism on the Facebook pages and so on for Alan being non-judgmental and so on about Rob, who one feels he could be quite judgmental about. But I think Alan played that quite well, and I was quite proud of the way he held his temper and tried to do the right thing on a sort of humane level. Anyway, Rob's had an offer of some kind of olive branch and he's too conceited to take it, and that'll be his own downfall. Good for that. And I thought it was really interesting how he tried to make Alan feel ashamed for Usha wanting him out and so on. I think that showed his true colours pretty well. So in some ways, that was quite a satisfying exchange.
I can't remember which one of you it was that described Rob as a petulant pain in the arse, but it sounded like either a House Martins or a Morrissey lyric. Yes, Rob. Petulant pain in the ass. He really was. I thought that was excellent. It hadn't occurred to me, actually, that Rob as, no, not Rob, Alan as the Mr. Reverend Vicar would actually have, would it's sort of beholden on him that he should go and try and, as he said, sort of make peace and heal the wounded village and all that. And he's the only one who, can, as she said, as Dusty said, can talk to Rob. And Rob was so foul. I mean, there was not an element of grace in, you know, in his, which just because he can't empathise, can he? Because he's like he is. Just not a shred of appreciation at Alan, you know, knowing what everybody knows about Rob and what he did and everything, Alan sort of being prepared to sort of hold out the olive branch and everything, and Rob basically, you know, snapped the olive branch over his knee and bashed Alan over the head with it. It was just, yeah, whoa. But such an interesting exchange between them. And also you can tell that Rob is on that slope, isn't he, towards a desperate, you know, he's so certain that he's gonna change poor Jack's name. He's so certain, you know, the sooner I get him away from Helen, the better, you know, get Jack away from Helen, the better. Just so certain that he's, that it, still somehow he's going to be proved right. And he's the only one that's talking sense and everyone else is mad. You know, it's just horrifying. And then that kind of, would you like a drink? I'm going to have a drink. You're going to have coffee then. And it's slightly accelerated speech, slightly hysterical, slightly kind of it in a manic state, definitely. So I think we're heading towards a Christmas abduction.
We're definitely heading to some big blow up. And I just thought that was one of the best bits of writing that we've encountered in such a long time. And also, you have to again applaud the acting, because as you rightly kind of point out, Rob veered from defiance to, contrition, and there was no contrition, but he did basically continue the conversation with Alan after saying there was no point.
Yeah.
So you got the point that he actually is lonely, even though you can't admit it to himself because no one else is talking to him.
Mm.
You know, he disparaged his mother for saying, "Oh yeah, my mother says I need, you know, looking after," but then said I don't, and then continued to have the conversation for quite some time. Then, as you said, then was incredibly defiant. Then there was his kind of laughter, his maniacal chuckle. Everything was played out there. And then you got this guy who is a good sort, isn't he? Forget the fact he's a man of the cloth, but he is also, you know. So he's doing what he genuinely believes he has to do, and then he doesn't believe that anybody's kind of, you know, born evil, which is something that, you know, you touched in your interview
with Charlotte, yeah.
But also he's doing his job, which is pastoral care and to heal and to check that people are all right. And you felt his frustration massively. I just thought it was just, you could just casually listen to that and a lot of the nuance would be lost. But, you know, with a keen ear, I just thought it was just brilliant. And also it kind of showed you the community kind of almost in a whole, in that the vicar has a real part to play. He isn't just in St. Stephen's every Sunday,
just gets wheeled out for Harvest Festival.
No, you know, they've made him, they've showed you his real true role, writ manifest, and how difficult it is, considering what an odious bastard this man is. But he still has to do his job. He's still a human being, you know, and he still needs some level of care. You know, I just thought it was great.
My two favourite bits were the big sigh that Alan gave when he got back in his car again after he'd got out of Rob's house. Mm. It was right at the end of the scene. He just shut the door. He said, "Right, see you then, Rob." Shut the door and just went like this. And it was like, oh, you know, but just such a human noise, a human gesture. And one of the things about narcissistic personality disorder is that people swing between victim and grandiosity, and you can see that absolutely more in Rob at the moment than at any other time, because he's the ultimate NPD thing to say is, I don't have any friends, I'm lonely, I don't have any friends, but that's because no one's as clever as me and they can't keep up. And so within one sentence, they've swung from being pity me to you're all idiots. And Rob is just doing that continually at the moment. This pendulum's going between victim, aggressor the whole time. And, you know, it's terrifying. It's a terrifying disorder and a terrifying state that he's in. It really is. He's getting to the stage of thinking he's actually omnipotent. And when the court rejects him, that's when whatever is going to happen will happen, I think.
Yeah, but we still have the job, don't we?
That'll be the next thing. Because, well, actually, let's go to Morris, because he wants to talk about that. Morris, a.k.a. John the Fifth.
Hello, this is Morris Snell, or John the Fifth, I think, third time caller in a row. I'm still really enjoying the podcast, especially with the recent restoration of actor interviews. They've been great. I also want to congratulate the writers on getting back to Archers as Normal and having no one storyline dominating everything else. But also, I really like the Brexit jokes. Elizabeth commenting on the demanding delegates at the conference for post-Brexit opportunities in financial services. And she said, the person who organised it resigned just before it started, and they keep changing their mind about what they want, and no one seems to know what they're doing. On the Justin and Rob question, although of course I'd love to see Rob in prison, I do think from Justin's point of view, it's entirely reasonable to offer him a job back before the trial, because in the eyes of the law and most of the village, Rob was an innocent victim of crime, waiting to give evidence. No reason to punish him as far as the public knew. Justin didn't know what we knew. And even after the trial, to take back the offer because of unproven allegations in court, probably slippery slope from a legal point of view. So now the question is whether Justin realises that Rob has lost the confidence of the village. But actually, does that stop him being effective in his new job? Well, yes, it may do when he's dealing with Ed and Adam and Brian. But actually, if Damara's estates are across the whole country, maybe Justin thinks that problem will blow over, as I think they said, and it's not a critical showstopper. So it's a difficult one when there's nothing proven. And I appreciate Helen's dilemma there. The new rules in identifying ourselves, I think I must be a Snell in Dumpty Dum terms as well as real life, because my first Archer's memory is my mum being embarrassed when the new awful Mrs. Snell was introduced about 30 years ago, I guess. So keep up the good work. Bye for now.
Exactly, Morris. He was entirely within his. It made total sense to offer him the job before the trial, because obviously then, and it was actually quite an act of good faith. It was, you know, he's innocent until proved guilty, and he was going by the book. You should do that. You shouldn't consider anything that's pending, especially when it's not you're the seen as the victim at that time. Rob was seen as the victim, not the aggressor. But now, I mean, who, as Morris says, who the hell is going to work for him? Ed can't even accept a drink from the man. Ed is Ed and Adam. I mean, it's just, and Brian, none of them are going to actually, it's going to be just awful, isn't it? There's going to be so much time spent on, you know, willy waving and backbiting. There's going to be absolutely no work done whatsoever.
Mm. As somebody said on some bit of social media, it makes no sense for Justin to continue to offer him the job, considering that local PR is such a big thing for Damara.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. So,
they've just employed the most hated man in Ambridge.
The most hated man in Britain. Forget yeah. Ambridge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just makes absolutely no sense. And it will just put a lie to all that nonsense where Justin Elliott wanted to sponsor this and sponsor that and whatever when he first came into the village.
And I still think Lillian would have withheld the conjugals from Justin, for, you know, and while all this was going on, and said, you have got to be joking.
Couldn't agree with you more, Juicy Loose.
Christine Armstrong, next.
Hello, Dum-de-dum. Hello, Royfield. Hello, Lucy. Hello, all fellow Dum-de-dummers. My name is Christine, and I'm a first-time caller in Ira. I've been listening to The Archers now for over 30 years, going back to the early 1980s, but I can't remember who was the first person who came into the village after I started listening. I also remember listening sometimes in the 1960s when my mother used to listen to The Archers. Present, I have no job. My husband and I have given up work to cycle around the world. So we've spent this year listening to The Archers and Dum-de-dum in various different countries of the world, and thoroughly enjoying it. And the biggest shock of all on our trip has been to find out that my husband has been a secret Archers listener for the past 10 years, and I knew nothing about it until the excitement of the stabbing. Makes you wonder what else he might have kept hidden from me for all this time. However, at the moment we have no fixed abode because of the travelling. I was phoning in a thought about Pip and Toby, which was that considerations being that Pip will inherit the farm, but quite honestly, I think the Pip and Toby relationship might be seen to be a long-term one, because it would provide much interest, because if you were her parents, or one of the other shareholders in Brookfield. Would you honestly want the farm to be handed on to someone who was in a relationship with Toby? And I think that could give some interesting storylines for the future. Anyway, that's all for now, and hope to catch up with you on our next cycling country, which will be the United States of America.
Hi there, Dumpty Dummers. It's Jojo Sexy Heels here. I've called up this week because I totally understand where Jill is coming from, holding a grudge for 50-odd years. I'm quite capable of doing that myself. I totally understand her point of view. And I think that the scriptwriters are setting up Toby to be the next Brian Aldridge. I think he's going to be a serial philanderer, and I think Pip's going to be a bit of a Jenny darling and forgive him each time he goes out and has it away with some new farm girl that turns up on the scene. And I think that Toby will end up as a bit of a gentleman farmer because Simon's obviously on his last legs, so he will be inheriting all his father's money. It won't be his brother. Rex has done all the hard work looking after his dad, and he's not going to get a penny, which will cause a bigger rift between the two brothers. And of course, Jill's hatred of Grace, Simon et al. Is going to ferment for years to come. And I'm really looking forward to it. So well done, scriptwriters. Enjoying it all and signing out. 1:16. Bye.
Christine, you have to tell us more about the cycling around the world. That sounds absolutely amazing. Even more amazing that you never knew your husband was a listener and he's... How did you not know? Did you just think he had a really regular 20-minute poo habit or something at 7:05 every evening? My God, that's just... I don't know. You're going to have to ring in again and tell us how you found out. I know you said it was about the stabbing, but what was how did you physically find out? Did he say, "Oh, I'm a bit shocked by that," and you said, "By what, dear?" And he said, "Well, that thing that I never told you I listened to," or what? Can't imagine it. Anyway, now Pip and Toby moving together. Pip would inherit the farm. Is Toby going to kind of hang around? Actually, we should play Jojo Sexy Heels in with Christine's call afterwards, because Jojo reckons that Toby is going to be the new Brian Aldridge. The kind of philandering entrepreneur. He doesn't act. Brian does do work, doesn't he? I mean, he does have. Well, yeah. Now he just sits in his study covertly drinking whiskey and pretending he's working on an Excel spreadsheet every time he dials down Pornhub and puts up his spreadsheet every time Jenny comes in. What was that on your screen, Brian? Nothing, dear. It was the average website.
Anyway, Lucy, Pornhub? is that your site of choice? I'm more of a YouPorn person myself.
I don't know. I just made it up. If there happens to be
come on.
That,
you know. You start. Know. I just happened to make up the name of one of the foremost porn website on the planet Earth.
It's the foremost one, though. You clearly are more well-informed about that than me.
Really?
Anyway, are you looking at your spreadsheet now? yes, I just... Have you changed your mind yet? Have I won the bet?
With what?
Pip and Toby.
Oh, God.
What?
What exactly did we disagree on? Think about what exactly we disagreed on.
You said that he didn't... You said he genuinely liked her.
He does.
No.
He's an arse. But he's genuinely, as far as he conceives it, in love with the woman. He's an arse. Is it going to last? I don't know. Probably, maybe... Who
so
cares?
What would make you,
but he has genuine feelings.
What would he have to do to make you think he didn't?
He would be running off with other women. He's not.
Yet.
There you go. So right here and now, he's in love with her. This is
okay,
not hard,
so as soon as he runs off with someone else, I win. Yes?
Look.
I can't remember what we bet. Was it a chili?
A bowl of seasoned chili.
Reading it by yourself. I'm not. I am not sharing.
I do think it's a bit ridiculous that old Pip hasn't really understood what the hell's going on by now.
Well, it's just nuts when she's saying, well, shall I go and talk to Rex? Like, that would help. What? Why? No, of course, don't go and talk to him. He's really upset and she must know. I mean, so many people have told her.
Well, like, one. And her brother hasn't. Josh kind of, you know, he didn't actually say, did he? It's only Alice that said he fancies you. And that's what I think. Josh didn't actually say.
She cannot be that dense,
though. Oh, she obviously is.
You can't be that thick and sentient, can you? Well, clearly she's good with cows and not a lot else, really. New York Nigel.
Ooh. Oh, I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien. I'm a
English man in New York. Oh. Hello, Royfield and Lucy and Millie Bell and fellow Dumpty Dummers. It's New York Nigel checking in. Who needs Halloween when we've got Rob Titchener? The conversation with Alan Franks was really spooky for someone in the vicar business. Not because Alan has any doubts, I don't think, about how vile and twisted and self-absorbed old Titchy Knob is, but because the vicar's expected to convey messages to the dark side when everybody else, quite rightfully, has totally cut him off. Alan doesn't really have the luxury of sailing past Rob on a horse like Shula, or refusing to serve him like Kenton in the pub or Susan in the shop. I thought it was quite well and chillingly written. Anyway, I'm looking forward to a toothless George Grundy following in his great-grandfather's footsteps and telling the story of the haunting of Blossom Hill Cottage during an evening episode sometime, say, October 2085. And that wasn't the only Halloween theme. Thinking about Neil grooming his private parts and a dressing gown clad and avocado-smeared Susan opening the door to a jodhpur-wearing Shula was stomach-churning, to say the least. And then we had the dismal and redundant Fairbrother making vomiting noises. It's just a shame that he wasn't sick over Pip, like Ed was sick over Susan's sofa. Anyone who can bring out the worst in the long-suffering Jill Archer certainly gets my vote as the worst Halloween villain of the week. Even though at times it felt a bit like the Susan Carter show, it made very nice and refreshing change from silly stories about seances or husband murder with Carol Tregoran, or yet another story about the Beast of Borchester. And two final little things. Lovely touch with Ian quoting Yeats and the sad poem about swans. That story there is being handled really well. I have to say that I'm getting the posh girls all mixed up at the moment. It makes a change from getting confused with the men, I suppose. Looking forward to calling again soon, catching up with a podcast after being too busy to listen to the Archers or you two for a few weeks. Bye for now.
He's getting all his posh girls muddled up. Yes, what is the hell going on with Kate and Alice's voices? Alice is just getting posher and posher and posher. And is there an affair in the offing with Alice and Ed?
It's been signposted so obviously, so I'm going to say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems too ridiculously obvious. But yeah. But much more interesting than that is just Emma's reaction, in that she's just so insecure, isn't she? That
my God, though, this would be great. Imagine poor Jennifer if Alice goes from a Carter, a horror bin Carter, to a Grundy. She'd never get over it. She'd be trying to drown herself in her wine fridge. Sorry, I interrupted you. I just had a funny image of Jennifer then having
to start. No. Well, I think I just about got my point out before I was rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
just to say, you know, poor Emma is just so insecure, isn't she? That, you know, whether it's Kirsty,
yeah,
at the tea shop, or whether it's Alice talking to Ed about a bit of business or marketing advice. You know, she just can't cope with it.
Yeah.
You know, and she's patrolling outside the front door. Yeah.
And then pretending she's, well, you weren't waiting for me, were you? No, just standing here, breathing in the evening air. But she's never going to be, if she carries on like that, she's never going to be properly happy, is she, Emma? Because she just sees threat. She's had to fight for such a lot that she kind of just sees threat and someone taking it away from her at every turn. It's exhausting, bless her. Even though she's been highly...
Do you reckon Ed's the type of man to have a sack back and crack?
Ed, no.
Really?
Ed have a sack back and crack?
Well, he's got...
What?
I'm just being silly. Well, you know, there was all that talk, wasn't there, about Neil?
Yeah.
Getting all a bit metrosexual.
Yeah. Adam and Ian, yes.
Mm. Right. Who else do you reckon could be tempted?
I reckon Chris Carter. You wouldn't want a lot of hair around with naked flame, would you?
Mm.
Not if he insists on wearing that leather apron with nothing underneath.
Does he insist on that, though? Or is that just your fantasy?
I insist on that when I think about it.
I reckon Kenton would give it a go once.
I think Kenton would give anything a go once.
Anything?
Yep.
Mm. Who else? I think that's the end, really, isn't it? There's nobody else in the village that would...
Bert? No. Bert's are probably down by his knees anyway. It would be difficult to do. Bert's aren't in the same postcode as the rest of him.
I know this is a little bit of a Charlotte stroke Susan episode, but
yeah,
I just loved all of last week whenever she was on.
Yeah, yeah. It was lovely.
Just her and Neil, just lovely.
Yeah.
And I like Linda giving her kind of advice on photography. Diane Arbus. Have you got a number?
I think Miss Arbus will be particularly hard to get hold of. But one of the best bit of timing, actually, for me anyway, didn't come from Susan at all. This is going to make me laugh again thinking about it. It was Shula opening the door and seeing Neil and Susan in their dressing gowns covered in that green stuff. And she just went, hello? as if they were aliens. So it was just, the timing was beautiful. Absolutely amazing. She doesn't get enough funny stuff. She really doesn't.
Who?
Shula. She kind of gets the fake mummy laughing, which is just rubbish.
Mm.
She doesn't get any proper, you know, humour. Mm. And as Morris said, I agree with him. I did like the Brexit lines about they were post... finance in the post-Brexit world,
yes.
And the man that organised the conference resigned. I thought, yes, that's very good.
Well, that was our Uncle Kerry God Davis, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, revealing his Remains sympathies there.
Hi to all Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Cosmo here. Following problems at Bridge Farm, we've been asked to look at the accounts recently, as it has been a difficult year for them, with the new shop closed for so many weeks relatively soon after being opened. Looking at the figures, we can see that you are worried about the recent legal fees which need to be met, but we should make clear that these cannot be met by the partners of Bridge Farm, and you need to identify who is responsible for the costs concerned, primarily Mrs. Titchener, we would assume, and we would recommend she talks urgently to her bank manager about these and other debts for which she is liable. Mr. Tony and Mrs. Pat Archer would only be liable for some of the costs relating to Master Henry Archer's residency court case costs, where you made the application. The sooner Mrs. Titchener returns to full-time work, the sooner she can address her debt mountain. You may feel she's entitled to having any loss of earnings during her absence being made good, and this will need to be agreed by the remaining partners, but it would help her financial position. The good news is that with the shop now fully open again and with Anya working hard on sale, the revenue is growing rapidly and it should soon be accruing good profits. The pigs and sausages have been consistently profitable and it is notable that sales levels of the latter have been much higher than in the shop since reopening. Anya says she has reinstated previous order levels to ensure that they always remain in stock. Some marketing of the veg boxes would be a good idea to regain lost customers, as some were put off by being linked to the unfortunate events at Blossom Hill Cottage. Diversifying into organic baby foods would be good, as Kirsty will soon find she is having a baby. The beef herd will repay more careful management. The signs are that the animals which have been kept on loan which have been on loan to home farms lays will be more profitable than those kept at Bridge Farm, and we recommend that more of the herd spend next summer on Adam's land. Finally, as Helen's a partner in the business, she will have to split her share with Mr. Robert Titchener when she divorces him, so there will in future be five partners in the business. You may wish to give consideration to buying his share from him to minimise his involvement, but under the partnership agreement you have no rights to force him to sell. You may wish to revise the partnership arrangement prior to the divorce commencing. And that's all from me.
Yes, that's it.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, let's very quickly take five, come back the other side, touch a mini bell, and then you can give us some tweets.
When you don't have a roof over your head.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was nothing marked classified on my emails, either sent or received.
Build that wall.
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
Said Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you... Available from Sainsbury's for the Posher Washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Good day, everyone. It looks as though our site has been hacked yet again, but I've managed to get in through the back door by going via forums. So that's good. At least I can leave my roundup for the week. And I'm sure that we're going to get that site improved very shortly. On our forums this week, Moldy Rose started a discussion about Rex, who has apparently found his balls. And Kenny Koala Bear is discussing the Ambridge Bake Off. So not exactly the most robust week on forums, but then you probably all have problems getting in. So my suggestion is, if you want to get in and you want to get around the hacking, if you go to dumptydum.com/forums, you'll go directly there, and that page doesn't seem to have been hacked yet. So on to our Facebook page, which was pretty busy this week, let me tell you. And we started by having a bit of a snork about the backsack and crack of Neil's. Sarah Jane still says, please don't remind me. I'd forgotten that horror since last night, and now you put it back in my head. Joe Jackson thought it was skin-crawling stuff. And Jacqueline Berto says, I love Neil, always have, but my stomach is churning right now. And Leslie Greaves, I think I'll give her the last word on this, although there's a lot more in that thread. She says, I always think of the person who applies the wax. What a job. Do you know what? I hadn't thought about it till you said that. Now, that is what I'm going to think about. Susan, Neil and Shula, my favourite scene of the year, I think. Look, I laughed so much when that happened. Shula standing so undecided on the door. And I just thought it was funny. I thought, you know, they're in a bit of a committed relationship, Susan and Neil. Surely people realise occasionally there'll be some fun times. But anyway... Leslie Grease said, my list of banned food includes custard, tuna bake, and now I have added avocado and chili. Emily reminded us, I wasn't expecting you erect smothered in avocado. And Alice Thomas says, it's hard to unsee my mental picture. Robert Dwyer on that thread coincidentally also said, what a brilliant Dumpty Dum podcast this week. Well done for guiding and letting the guys just talk. Well done. It was pretty awesome, Royf. You did a great job. And it was a really fun episode. They've got a lot of wisdom to share with us. And aren't we lucky that the actors can now come on to our program? Also, we are asking you if you would let us know where you live. If you go to the Facebook page, there is a map visualization. Feeling a bit lonely over here in Australia. So please, can some of you let me know that you're here and I'm not all on my own? And then finally, we were talking about whether we hadn't seen coming that Kate would be not helping with the panto, even though she says she is. That was really interesting because I hadn't realised how divided people are about Kate. Catherine Kavanagh says, I absolutely love Kate. She's utterly appalling, totally selfish and narcissistic, but none of it is nasty. She's comedic gold and we should give more credit to the actress playing her for the delivery. Couldn't agree with you more, Catherine. Alice, on the other hand, I literally want to punch my radio when I hear her. Witherspoon said, and for health reasons, I recommend not punching your radio whilst listening to Alice. But he also says that he doesn't like Kate, which rather surprised me. Joe Andrews says, every time I hear Kate in the background, I get an earworm and can hear, I'm busy doing nothing, working the whole day through, adjusting wind chimes, oiling yurt poles, testing gut flora treatments. I do hope she ends up sitting on a green enviro portaloo for 24 hours. Oh gosh, you lot are so funny. Anyway, that's my roundup for this week. Please get involved. So remember, dumptydum.com /forums. Go straight there to bypass the hacking just for the moment. And then if you would like to talk to us on Facebook, you just search for Facebook and we're there. And there's lots of us there. And I have to tell you, the program is short. It's usually only about an hour. But if you get onto Facebook, well, we can talk for as long as we like, can't we? So I'll see you there. So until next week, hooroo!
Thank you, Miss Bell.
Thank you, Millie Bell.
And I don't keep plugging this, but I will. If you wanted to go on to Tractor, the Dum-de-Dum map, you could see approximately where Millie Bell hails from in the great country that was Australia. So, that's just saying. Oh, by the way, if you are Australian or just Antipodean in general, things are a bit sparse down there map-wise. So, we got a guy in Perth, we got somebody over in New Zealand, and that's just about it other than Millie Bell. So, do yourselves proud and pin yourself to our map. Thank you. Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give us some tweets?
Yokel Scare, as it's Halloween, says, later in The Bull, Susan Carter announces that Neil is having his balls manscaped. Kenton and Jolene close the pub early. I don't know the significance of why they closed it early, but it made me laugh. When the clocks went back, Kay Williamson said, has Linda adjusted Resurgam Stone? That's a good point. I don't know how you do that. Fat Bloke Talking said, was Shula's arrival last night a setup for a 70s-style porno? You can ring my bell now, says Neil, as Susan enjoys her facial. Fat Bloke Talking, this is very rude. Cod Little said, God, I loathe Joe Grundy. Please, can someone park in a service station car park with him? And, you still there?
Yes.
Oh, Ruth Arian said, Susan getting a spray tan, more contract work for Ed then. And Becky Black Book, I still can't say this, Becky Black Books, Tweet of the Week. And she said, Alan asks himself, what would Jesus do? And here's the answer in his head, finish him, they'll never suspect the vicar.
We've managed to get all the way through this episode and not mention the fact that Roy's on Tinder.
I know.
How is that even possible?
Because they made all the jokes for us. There wasn't any.
Well, we could still comment on it. Because we have said on this podcast many moons ago, how comes things like that, you know, things in the real life don't intrude on Ambridge? Yeah. And there you go.
He's swiping away like a good one, isn't he?
Mmm.
That was ridiculous, though. Well, that, you know, having shots done with a dog. And do people do that? I mean, what did Wendy meets the lady and then she says, where's the dog then? And then he has to say, oh, no, I borrowed one for £3. £3! The fuss he made about that. Honestly, it was like he'd had to auction his house to get the dog for the afternoon.
Lucy, you're having a laugh. Of course people do stuff like that.
Other people's...
The thought.
Well, I think half the folks I've seen leaning up against sports cars aren't their sports cars. That's for damn sure.
What have you been doing on Tinder?
About.
Yes.
No. About. How? Go 7 years ago, my friend.
Tinder was... didn't exist 7 years ago.
No. We went. It was called My Single Friend. And you write a nice thing about the person. And they then because you can always describe people better than they can do it themselves, because they kind of get flustered and all that. And we spent a very happy evening one evening looking up at pictures of all these blokes on My Single Friend. And in the before we hit the white wine, we started off very sort of giving them a chance, saying, oh, he looks nice. He looks friendly, doesn't he? Yes, we'll say we like him, yes. You know. And by the end of it, we're going, it says here, fun-loving, alcoholic. Like, was it, likes people, shagger, next. You know, we just went through. you get very quick at summing people up, and it doesn't, it's one little thing that you just think, no, that shirt would get right on my nerves. Gone, you know, that's it. So I do know what is a Tinder, actually.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you know a little bit too much about Tinder and the whole online dating world.
But it worked, though, and she's now pregnant with her second child.
Ooh.
Bloke that she met through My Single Friend.
And you wrote the art, you wrote the piece?
Yeah.
All the people I've met associated with you are nicer than you.
I know. I make a policy to only like people who are nicer than me.
Your sister, why the hell Greavesy, would I want to,
why would I like, want to spend time with people like me?
The deputy head, they're all lovely. Little Annie. Yeah. Oh my.
Who's the deputy head?
What's his name? The teacher.
What's his name? The teacher.
I can't remember his name now. He's lovely. You've got him listening to The Archers and Dumdy Dum.
I think you dreamt him. I don't know.
You've got a friend. He came to our 100th do as a teacher with his daughter.
Oh, Sean. Yeah.
The deputy head.
Yes.
As I was saying, the deputy head.
Oh, yes.
Your friend.
Yes.
Who's nicer than you?
I did know he was the deputy head. Oh, dear. Probably ought to be nicer to him, shouldn't I? Now I know he's important.
He's on our map.
Is he?
Yeah. He lives just round the corner from Greavesy, doesn't he?
He does.
There you go. Because they're overlaying each other.
Oh, ooh, I don't think they're that close, but anyway.
Which is a perfect time for me to say, gosh, shop, go there, dumdydum.com. Also, on dumdydum.com, I've been giving out this rather long, cumbersome URL. Forget all that crap. Just go to dumdydum.com/map, and that's where it will be. I'm going to put it on there tomorrow, tomorrow being Tuesday. Which would be the 1st of November. And just pin yourself.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Via Facebook or just kind of Twitter. Smashing. iTunes reviews, send them in. We love them. Now, apart from sending us a review, if you'd like to help us, there are a couple of ways this can be done. You can help us by donating, by hitting that donate button on our website, or you can do the Patreon thing, which is you go to patreon.com, and that's about $2 a show. Now, to get in contact with us, You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe, or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message. On social media, you can find us specifically on Twitter, where we're at dumdydumme. I'm at Royfield. Harriet is at Sam Bridges.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman. And Charlotte, how can people find you?
Yep, people can find me at Ambridge View.
On Facebook, you can go and find us by simply typing in dumdydum. Is that it, Lucy?
It is. I now have to go and help my children dress up so they can go round and legally mug people. Old people for sweets.
You know, what I kind of love about traditions is how they kind of get mangled through time. So though I rail against trick-or-treating and Halloween and saying what's happened to Bonfire Night, this is like one of the most English and British of old traditions, which the Americans nabbed of us, and we're just nabbing it back.
Yeah.
It's just,
I know, because people say, oh, it's an American thing. And you think, but we've been doing trick-or-treating since, you know, the Druids.
Yeah, or at least, you know, yeah, or Halloween and, you know, celebrating, you know, the dead and whatever. But And then you look at Mexico with their Day of the Dead thing, and you go, oh, that's all a bit peculiar. You know, people dressing up as skeletons and painting their faces and, you know, and thinking about their ancestors. And you go, oh, yeah, Halloween, we kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Culture, history, it's a funny business.
Is that the title of your new podcast?
No, it's called Walkie Talkie, featuring one Lucy V. Freeman.
Which, if she ever...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Gets our mics together will happen. Yes, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Smashing. All right, then. I best edit this, then.
All right.
Toodaloo.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.